sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
I'm David Knight. It's November the 3rd, 2017, Friday, and tomorrow is the big day they've been touting. Major ad taken out in the New York Times by a communist organization promoting November the 4th as a day of pushing back. You know, it may have already started. The area where I used to live, just outside of Chapel Hill, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, they had a small explosion yesterday. I'm going to take a look at that and ask if that was the start of the Antifa protests that are coming up. We also got the Democrats and CNN absolutely shocked by Donna Brazile's revelations in her book. She calls the book hacked. No, they're still lying to you if they're telling you that the DNC emails were hacked. They're not hacked. We've had William Binney, who is a former global technical head of the NSA, say that there's absolutely no way, if you look at the timestamps on the data as it was transferred on files that were later released a month or so later. He said, this looks like this was an internal individual who did this. You could not transfer it over the internet that quickly, that quantity of information. He doesn't believe it at all. And of course, we didn't for many other reasons as well. We had testimony from Julian Assange. We had testimony from a former U.S. ambassador who worked with WikiLeaks saying, I went to the U.S. I was handed the information by an individual who was a whistleblower. And we've got more information that has now come out from a whistleblower inside the DNC, upset about their prejudice against, let's see, how'd they put this? Straight white males who are cisgender. And if you don't know what that is, we'll explain that to you. But it defines the mentality of the Democrat Party. And it's absolutely ironic what is said in the memo that was leaked by a disgruntled DNC employee. It's still going on there. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the tax plan that has been released. And Twitter removed President Trump yesterday for 11 minutes. At first I said, well, we don't know what was happening. And then they said, oh, it looks like somebody, a human, inadvertently removed him. And then as they did their investigation, they said, well, it looks like an employee who was on his last day as his way out the door. I don't know if they fired him because they're probably telling you the truth. I don't know that Twitter would fire anybody for deleting the president's account. When you look at what they did to manipulate the information about the DNC leaks, they were complicit in doing the cover-up with that. That's where we got all of the Russian narrative, the lies about it being hacked, so that you wouldn't look at the content of what came out. And that's where this all began. And of course, Twitter was very much involved in shutting down any discussion as to what was leaked. They admit now that they shut down half of the Twitter hashtags that were talking about DNC leaks, hashtag DNC leaks. They shut down half of those and kept them from going out. So they took out half of the discussion about DNC leaks from Twitter. So that's, I don't know, you know, it seems to me, there's so many different things that are happening that are criminal, from Uranium One, from the cover up by the FBI, by Robert Mueller, who was director at the FBI, and now he's running the investigation, perhaps destroying evidence. Maybe that's why he was put in. Rod Rosenstein was there at the same time. Maybe that's why Mueller was selected. He always seems to be the guy that is their go-to guy for anything like this. And he had a very long tenure at the FBI. We had an entire police surveillance state put in under the tenure of Robert Mueller. He was appointed by the establishment 1 week before 9/11. And he has been at the heart of all these criminal investigations. As I said earlier in the week, it's kind of like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon in Hollywood. Well, it's actually just 1 degree of Robert Mueller. But when we look at all these different crimes and all the different ways that they're covering it up, is there something about maybe an in-kind contribution to Hillary Clinton that Twitter contributed? Maybe we ought to take a look at that. I guess we'll never get that far down if we can't even do anything about the obvious criminals at the top who are always protected. I'm David Knight. Stay with us. I'll be right back.
real news. Live from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
It's Friday, November 3rd, 2017. Much-awaited November 4th movement by Antifa, trumpeted in the New York Times as a very expensive ad taken out by some communists who don't seem to like capitalism. We may have one of the first attacks happen yesterday in USC Chapel Hill. We'll take a look at that. But I want to start with Twitter taking down President Trump's account yesterday. Now, this is something that Twitter now says was done by a rogue employee. At first, they said, well, we don't know what happened. It was down for a full 11 minutes. And as one of the articles says, that's an eternity on Twitter, you know, because people are just constantly looking at this thing and watching it. And it's like, where is he? Where is he? And, and I think it's interesting, the reaction of the Twitterverse of social media, when you see where these people are really coming from, you see how they love censorship. They don't want to explain what they're doing. And we have seen this so many times. I've mentioned before, when we went to the protests of Planned Parenthood here, we had signs that were talking about black genocide. And they don't come, the Marxists who came there to shut down what we had to say. I wasn't there. My wife was there. Other people from InfoWars were there. Alex Jones was there. They came to shut down what we were saying at the Planned Parenthood clinic. I guess you could call it a clinic. Butcher shop, maybe. They didn't have signs of their own. These Marxists who showed up, and they were all Marxists, they showed up with black squares, big black posters, nothing at all on it, to redact what we were saying about black genocide. So that's what they do. And that's what we see on Twitter, the response we see on Twitter. And we're going to read you some of the responses. Of course, our guest today in studio is going to be Roger Stone. And I'm sure he's going to have something to say about this. This comes less than a week after they banned him for life because he pushed back on some CNN reporters and what they were saying about the Manafort indictment. And of course, to just remind you, Roger Stone has had multiple death threats put against him. So has the president. Roger Stone said they've made death threats against me, against my wife, against my pet, and nobody has taken these people down. But they took down President Trump for 11 minutes yesterday, and Twitter celebrated. Also, our guest is going to be Dr. Bonner Cohen is also going to be one of our guests, and he's going to talk about some more good news at EPA. Again, the best pick, I believe, that President Trump has made in his cabinet, Scott Pruitt. And we're also going to give you an idea of what's going on with the tax plan, what has been released by the House. Of course, it has to be approved by the Senate. And the Democrats and CNN are absolutely, totally shocked by Donna Brazile's new book. They find it a revelation that, yes, Hillary Clinton really did rig the primaries against Bernie Sanders. Do you find that revealing? I'll tell you what is revealing when we get to that. It's not what Donna Brazile says. But I'll tease it here for you. Here's a spoiler alert. It's the fact that Donna Brazile is saying something. That is the thing that is most important about all of this. The fact that the Democrat establishment has turned on Hillary Clinton and with a vengeance. We're going to talk about that. Celebrate that a little bit. It's a little bit kind of, it's kind of fun to watch. If we can't send her to prison, and I guess absolutely nothing that Hillary Clinton could ever do would warrant her going to prison. No matter how red-handed she is caught. But if we can't send her to prison, at least we can enjoy her going in down into obscurity. But let's take a look at what happened with Twitter. First, they came out and said an employee inadvertently deactivated Trump's account. We're going to track this down. Later on, they said, well, it was a guy who was on his way out, or a woman, an employee who was leaving, and decided that they would do this as a parting shot. And here's a response from Twitter. One person says, Donald Trump's Twitter was deleted! Exclamation mark. Finally, someone did the right thing. Sadly, it wasn't our government who did it. See, they're embracing, they're celebrating the authoritarian ideas of censorship. That's what these people are about. This is the intolerance of the left. Another one, whoever disabled Donald Trump's Twitter account shouldn't be sacked. They should be promoted. Another one, I'm saving this picture of Trump's Twitter account as a reminder that anything can happen with anyone, no matter how big you are. And it shows real Donald Trump does not exist. And that was what everybody was seeing on Twitter for about 11 minutes. Donald Trump's Twitter needs to be deactivated for lifetime. Twitter will be a happier place. Yes, they do not want to be disturbed by anybody who has a point of view different from theirs. And they want the government to do it for them as well. That's these socialist Marxists. That's what the communists have always done. You don't have a free press. You don't have freedom of expression. As a matter of fact, you don't have any freedoms at all under Marxism. It was Lenin who said, yes, liberty is a very precious thing. That's why it must be rationed by him. Someone out there is about to put deleted Donald Trump's Twitter account on their resume. Yes, that's something you should be proud of. Not all heroes wear capes, they say. And then The Independent says the internet has nominated the Twitter employee who shut down Trump's account for a Nobel Peace Prize. They say, please get the departing Twitter employee who deactivated Donald Trump's account for their last day a medal, a knighthood, a magnum of champagne, and a small tropical island. I heard the BBC, their commentator, celebrating it today. I just wish I knew who this person was. I want to give him a high five. To the hero who shut down Dotard's Twitter account today, we salute you for doing what we all wanted to do. Yes, that's what they all wanted to do. That's what they all want. And another one. You say human error. I say due for a promotion. And I say so, too, because this is in line with what Twitter wants to do. It's what we have seen in the last couple of days. As I pointed out earlier, the whole thing about Donna Brazile, the title of her book that is coming out that she's now promoting is called Hacked. Well, that's a lie. They were not hacked. As I said at the top of the hour, William Binney, the former global technical head of the NSA, and he ought to know, said it wasn't possible. If you look at the timestamps and the quantity of data, it wasn't possible to have grabbed that over the internet. We have seen revelations coming out of WikiLeaks showing the manuals that they have within the CIA as to how they can make anything that they do like it's coming from another country. But it didn't even go over the internet. We had Julian Assange, who has not lied to you like CNN and Hillary Clinton and the DNC and the mainstream media. Julian Assange said it was not a state actor. In other words, it was somebody from the inside. A former British ambassador said, I went to the U.S. I was handed this stuff by a disgruntled DNC individual. And the whole narrative about the Russian hack, and that's the title of Donna Brazile's book, Hacked. But the reality is that what was hacked was the DNC, and it was hacked from the inside by Hillary Clinton, and it was an insider who exposed it. But Twitter participated in this cover-up. Hillary Clinton came out with a narrative, it was the Russians who did it, it was a red herring, as I said, a smelly fish that she drug across the track as a diversion so that the hounds would be off of the track, so that nobody would look at the emails. And Twitter participated in that as well. They admitted that they buried the Podesta email hashtag. They admitted that they buried the hashtag that was talking about DNC leak, hashtag DNC leak. They said that they took out 48% of the tweets about hashtag DNC leak. So, yes, that last person was right. This individual is due for a promotion at Twitter. This individual did what Twitter has been doing with algorithms, what Twitter did to Roger Stone. And Roger Stone says he's going to sue them. He's going to own them. Well, I hope if he owns them, he find a way to make money, because they don't seem to know how to make money. They don't seem to appreciate Twitter as a free speech campaign. And when we come back, we're going to play a clip for you of Ted Cruz. But I just want to remind you that as they make a big deal out of the fact that Facebook had 100,000 impressions on ads that they did, they also pointed out that that was 0.004%. In other words, 0.001 thousandths of a percent of what was happening there. And at the time that what Twitter is doing, they're taking 57,000 users, 426,000 unique tweets, and they're throwing them away algorithmically because they don't want you to hear. They don't want you to see what was in that information. That is what Twitter is about. And that, by the way, is why these social media accounts need to be treated as de facto monopolies that they are. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Niederwein. We're going to take a look at what Ted Cruz said about the censorship of Twitter. As I pointed out before, as the emails were breaking from Podesta, and before that, the DNC leak, they were algorithmically shutting down half of the tweets about the DNC leak. And of course, Hillary and the others were pushing everything they could about Russia so that you wouldn't look at the content of those leaks. And Twitter was shutting down people who were tweeting about it, who were trying to show the content of the leaks. They were helping her in that effort. Maybe we should file a complaint with the FEC, Federal Elections Commission, and say, what about this in-kind contribution from Twitter? Is that legal for them to do that? Is that legal for them to suspend free speech? And of course, as we look at all of this, understand, as I pointed out yesterday, there is a case, one of these gay wedding bakery cases that has gone to the Supreme Court. They said it has generated the most briefs to the court on both sides of the issue, the most briefs. In other words, has been the most controversial issue that they've had for several years. And that includes things like it's at the level that they've seen in the past for things like abortion and other issues. So it is in the top three in terms of the number of amicus briefs that have been sent to the court. It's a very controversial issue. It's a very difficult issue for most people to get their head around. I think it's very clear. And I think that if they're going to say that a small business, which does not have a monopoly, I mean, in my opinion, what we're seeing here is a baiting that was going on. These people were doing this as a baiting situation. They were not put out by the fact that they couldn't get a baker to participate in their wedding ceremony. And that's the point that they're making. When you go to bakers, when you go to photographers, they're not simply selling you a product that you take away. They're participating in the ceremony. And they say that that offends their religious beliefs. And so that's the conflict. You know, religious beliefs that are protected in the First Amendment versus the idea that when you set up a business, you have to not discriminate against anybody. And it's a different thing if you're selling a product versus whether you are going to participate in a ceremony. So that's the issue there. Nevertheless, if you're going to say, and it's interesting to me that the people on the left who are saying that we have to force the bakers to serve anybody to go to a wedding, the photographers to go to a wedding, those people are also saying and celebrating, as we saw with the takedown of President Trump's Twitter account, they celebrate the censorship of these de facto monopolies like YouTube, like Twitter, like Facebook. They celebrate that. And you don't have another place to go besides those three. They're like the big three, as Gerald Celente said. It's like ABC, CBS, NBC used to be. They're trying to reestablish that kind of, it's not a monopoly, but a triopoly. That's what they had essentially in the past, all politically on the same page. And by doing that, shutting down any information that is contrary to their political beliefs. That's the way they ran the mainstream networks, the way they still run them. And we were able to get around that control by using the internet. So then they have these three big social media accounts where they can basically, what they're trying to do is to set up a system where you cannot share information about what you have read, which allows us to get around their gridlock. So they say that a baker must do this because the individuals don't have another choice. That's absolutely not true, but it is true in the case of these social media individuals. Before we get to Ted Cruz's clip here, I just want to remind you of some of the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We've added a couple of new ones yesterday. We had Biome Defense Probiotics, 25% off. And, of course, that has probiotic cultures from 23 different strains. They're known to support digestion and intestinal function. Very important. Especially if you're taking antibiotics, it's going to cut down, it's going to kill your good probiotic gut bacteria. You need to restore that. That is now 25% off. Biome Defense, also DNA Force, 25% off. And we have some of the other items that have been on sale for a while. DNA Force is, like I said, 25% off. But we also have Emmerich's Essential Packs, 50% off. Winter Sun, 50% off. Survival Shield X2 and BioTru Selenium, 40% off. BrainForce is 40% off. So take a look at the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Let's take a look at what Ted Cruz had to say about censorship. And then we're going to get into Donna Brazile and her amazing revelation. Absolutely shocking, said Wolf Blitzer. But let's hear what Ted Cruz has to say about censorship first.
That same professor ran a second study and found the vast majority of news outlets that were represented in Google searches were left-leaning. It's not just Google. In 2016, it was revealed that Facebook was, quote, curating the list of trending news stories on their website. According to reports, Facebook workers were artificially spiking conservative stories, including stories about former IRS official Lois Lerner, former Navy SEAL Chris Kyle, and positive stories about conservative politicians. The reports also revealed that stories by conservative outlets like the Washington Examiner or Newsmax that were popular enough to be picked up by Facebook's trending stories algorithm were nonetheless excluded until the New York Times and CNN began covering the same stories. Just last month, Twitter barred Representative Marsha Blackburn from advertising her campaign launch video because it deemed a line about her efforts to investigate Planned Parenthood to be inflammatory. The Susan B. Anthony List recently had a video advertisement against a political candidate blocked on Twitter because it referred to partial birth abortion as being akin to infanticide. Now, those are all political positions that people can take in our democratic society. But it is disconcerting if those political positions become a lens through which the American consumers consume news. So I want to ask each of you, do you consider your sites, Mr. Edgett and Mr. Stretch, to be neutral public fora?
You said that without laughing.
Senator, we think of Facebook as a platform for all ideas. Uh-huh. And we have boundaries in the sense that we don't permit certain categories of content, such as hate speech. But within those guidelines, we do not in any way discriminate on the basis of viewpoint or ideology.
So I'm just trying to understand, is that a yes or no, whether you consider yourself to be a neutral public forum?
We don't think of it in the terms of neutral, because what we're trying to do actually is provide each user a personalized news feed that will be the content that's most interesting to that user. But we do think of ourselves as, again, within the boundaries that I described, open to all ideas without regard to viewpoint or ideology.
Yeah, and of course, Twitter is neutral. That's why when they had about 500,000 people talking about the DNC leaks, they algorithmically excluded half of those, 500,000. That's neutral, isn't it? Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're going to tell you what's going on. There's still leaks from disgruntled DNC employees from the inside. We'll give you the latest scoop on that. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight. In a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. It's Friday, November 3rd, 2017. I'm David Knight, and we're going to take a look at Donna Brazile, this amazing revelation. We are shocked, says CNN. We're shocked that they rigged the primaries against Bernie. Who knew? Who knew that this could happen? And as a matter of fact, but before we get to that, let's take a look at the latest leak, because her book says, the title of her book is Hacked. And she continues to push this narrative that it was the Russians who hacked these emails. As I've said multiple times, it was an effort to distract you from reading what was in the emails, even as Twitter was shutting down half of the tweets that were talking about it. They did not want you to see what was going on. Twitter did not want you to see what was going on. What you really ought to call her book is What Really Happened But she's not telling us what really happened. Let me give you an example of this, because we just had in the last day or so, I think it came out yesterday, another leak from somebody inside the DNC who is upset about what's going on. And this is what leaked out. It is a memo from their IT manager. And it says this. It says, as you may have heard, we are rebuilding the technology team into a robust, well-oiled machine that can tackle all elections from presidential down to dog catcher and school board. What's more important is that we be focused on hiring and managing and maintaining a staff of diverse voices and life experiences. Does that say something to you? Do you understand that they would like to participate? They can tackle all elections from the president down to dog catcher. But even more important than that is that IT have a diverse staff. That's the most important thing, because that reflects the Democrat priorities. They're all about identity politics. And that's why they continue to lose. That's why they lost more than 1,000 seats, that and their socialism. That's why they lost more than 1,000 seats under Obama. And they're not going to get them back. That's the good news. But let me tell you, what would be funny if it wasn't something that was being adopted by millennials? And this, of course, is an email that was revealed by the Daily Wire. And they also posted a comment from an anonymous DNC staffer. So this is coming out of the DNC. These are people who are leaking this information, just as they leaked the information about how the DNC had rigged the primaries against Bernie Sanders. It was a leak. It was not a Russian hack. Let's keep repeating that. It was a leak. Clearly, the DNC, says the anonymous DNC staffer, clearly the DNC is doubling down on a failed strategy that has already alienated staffers and voters alike. Yes, that's what really happened. That's what really happened. It's your identity politics. It's killing you. And we're so happy to see it. Because if you weren't killing yourself with identity politics, you'd be killing us with socialism and communism. This DNC staffer said, we want to be judged based on the quality of our work, not on identity politics. Well, maybe you should be working for a different political organization, because that's not what the Democrats are about. They're not about merit. They're about identity politics. They said, how can we trust the leadership of the DNC if they don't even trust us? Well, we don't trust the leadership of the DNC. They would go all the way around the world to lie to us before they would admit the obvious truth. They're pathological liars. And when you look at this, what she goes on to say is, she said, I would personally prefer that you not forward any job notices to cisgender straight white males, since they're already in the majority. Not put this out to straight white males who are cisgender. Now, in case you don't know what cisgender is, Breitbart breaks it down for you. Cisgender is a term that refers to normal people. So they do not want any normal people, in addition to not wanting any white straight males. They don't want anybody who is normal. For example, you have cisgender. Think of it as the antithesis that they have invented to be the antithesis of transgender. So you have transgender that we celebrate, and then cisgender that we spit upon. A cisgender person, as these progressive socialist cultural Marxists say, is somebody like a man who's living as a woman. Now, if you had a woman who is living as a woman, she's cisgender. We don't want any cisgenders. That's CIS, not SIS. they want to focus on diversity. And they want to focus on transgenderism. And so they're going to wind up giving people like the Awan brothers that the former DNC chair, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, had. Because they're going to vet you for your identity. They're going to vet you for your diversity. But they're not going to vet you for your capability. Because, one of these Awan brothers had been working at McDonald's before he started getting six-figure salaries from the DNC. More money than most of the high staff assistants do in Congress. They're also not going to vet you for any kind of criminal background either, are they? You can see that. That's not important. I mean, come on. Let's not be divisive. Let's not look at people's criminal background. Let's not look at their terrorist links. Let's not look at their competence. Let's just hire people from McDonald's, bring them in as IT managers, pay them six-figure salaries, and watch them steal information and sell it to foreign services, because you know they're gonna be our crooks. We're gonna own them. They're our diversity buddies. So what about her book? As Fox News reports, Donna Brazile says, "I found proof the DNC rigged the nomination for Hillary Clinton." Wow, really? So, you know, she said, "I'd promised Bernie when I took the helm of the DNC after the convention that I would get to the bottom of whether Hillary Clinton's team had rigged the nomination process as a cache of emails stolen by Russian hackers and posted them online had suggested." Again, her book is called Hacked. She's still selling the lie that this was the Russian hackers. And she now seems to want to distance herself from Hillary Clinton. That is the most important revelation. The fact is that this woman, Donna Brazile, as we learned from some of the DNC leaks, we learned that while she was at CNN, she was passing questions to Hillary about debates that were coming up or forums that were coming up. I forget whether it was a debate or a forum, but she was passing information on to Hillary Clinton, feeding her that stuff before she was DNC chair. She's somebody who has a long history with the Democrat Party and with the Clintons. So the fact that she is now dumping dirt on Hillary Clinton, I think, goes beyond the resentment within the Democrat power circles of Hillary Clinton's bitter world whining tour, her bitter loser whining tour, where she is blaming everybody from Obama and Biden and Bernie Sanders and all these different people, blaming everyone inside the party and outside of the party for her loss. Everybody is to blame except for Hillary Clinton. And I think they've had enough of that, but I think they're also very concerned about her criminal exposure. If we ever get an attorney general who will do his job, or if Jeff Sessions happens to wake up, there's some people who could seriously go to jail if we were going to have an honest government anymore. You know, President Trump has tweeted out, he said, I'm very upset about this, but you know, I can't do anything because I can't direct the attorney general as to what to do. Well, you know what? You can fire him. You can fire him. You can get somebody else in there if he's not going to do the job. You can talk to him and tell him to resign. They go on to say that what she found was an agreement that was signed by the former CEO of DNC and with Robbie Mook, and a copy to the lawyer who had hired the dirty dossier, Mark Elias, that specified in exchange for raising money and investing in the DNC, Hillary would control the party's finances, the strategy, and the money that they raised. Her campaign had the right of refusal of who would be the party communications director, and it would make the final decisions on all other staff. Okay, so understand that how this happened was the fact that Obama left the party bankrupt, highly in debt. And Hillary came in as a white knight because she got all this. She's flush with cash from all of her criminal dealings, all of her influence for cash that she's traded as Secretary of State, and the long legacy of Bill and Hillary Clinton. So she's pretty wealthy. And she comes in and says, "I'll bail out the Democrat Party with all this cash that I've accumulated with my criminal dealings, but I will control the Democrat Party." And so that's the most interesting bit of dirt that comes out of her book. But I think the most fascinating thing about it is that these people are distancing themselves from Hillary. They don't want to go to prison with her, just in case the Department of Justice decides that they'll start enforcing the law. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the year. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to play the astonished clips of Wolf Blitzer and others. And Elizabeth Warren is now jumping into this and throwing Hillary Clinton under the bus along with Donna Brazile. They're trying to distance themselves very far from her. And you know what, folks? Her political career is over, even if she doesn't go to prison as she deserves. So we're going to play those clips for you in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you of what we have on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. It's what supports this program and everything that we do here. It's the products that we sell to help you with your health, and we have massive discounts on some of the most popular products here, and they're not going to last much longer. We've had BrainForce at 50% off. That is going to be ending pretty soon. We also still have, however, Winter Sun at 50% off. We have all Imrik's Essentials. That's our line of household organic non-GMO products, 50% off. We have Caveman, 50% off. Supermale Vitality and Anthroplex. Supermale Vitality is 30% off. Anthroplex is 50% off. And right now you can get 10% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink with the code VITA10 at checkout. You know, President Trump says he's very frustrated because of all the things that are coming out about Hillary Clinton. I guess he's also frustrated. He hasn't really talked about the fact that Robert Mueller, as director of the FBI, was involved in the cover-up of the what they had found out about the criminal dealings of the corporation that Hillary Clinton and the rest of the Obama administration was pushing to turn over to a Russian source. That was being done 15 months before the sale went through. The Oversight Committee did not do their job. Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton received millions of dollars as that sale went through. As I pointed out yesterday, we now learn that as the Obama administration was assuring us that they would not be exporting any uranium, it turns out that they did. And surprise, surprise, when they exported the uranium, they did it in a way that violated the law, and they covered it up. They kept it secret from Congress. They kept it secret from the public. They didn't get an export license. They didn't even bother to apply for one. Instead, they just added the name of a company to the trucking shipping list, sent it to Canada without letting anybody know so that nobody would see. They did it very quietly under the radar. And then it went from there to Europe. And from Europe, we don't know where it went. Yeah, that's the way these guys operate. Everything about it is criminal. And so President Trump says, he says he's very frustrated. This was in a radio interview he had. He said, you know, it's the saddest thing because I'm the president of the United States and I'm not supposed to be involved with the Justice Department. I'm not supposed to be involved with the FBI. Why aren't they going after Hillary Clinton with her emails and the dossier and that kind of money? Now, maybe they are. But as president, and I think you understand this, as a president, you're not supposed to be involved in that process. And he wrote, tweeted out, he said, Donna Brazile just stated the DNC rigged the system to illegally steal the primary from Bernie Sanders, bought and paid for by crooked Hillary. This is real collusion and dishonesty, major violation of campaign finance laws and money laundering. Where is our Justice Department? Now, as they point out in this Daily Caller article, I am not sure either what campaign law this is specifically breaking when Hillary Clinton comes in with millions of dollars that she got with colluding to hide the crimes of the people who were buying Uranium One. She's flush with cash with all these criminal dealings, and she comes in to bail them out. And here's the amount of money that was in there. This is from her op-ed piece in Politico. She said, the Saturday morning after the convention in July 1st, she said, I called the chief financial officer of Hillary's campaign, and he told me that the Democrat Party was broke and $2 million in debt. What? I screamed. I am officer of the party, and they've been telling us everything is fine, and they're raising money with no problems. Kind of sounds like the way that they managed the country, isn't it? She said, officials from Hillary's campaign had taken a look at the DNC's books. Obama had left the party $24 million in debt. Oh, you know, kind of like he left the country $20 trillion in debt. Obama's campaign was not scheduled to pay it off until 2016. Hillary for America and the Hillary Victory Fund had taken care of 80% of the remaining debt in 2016, about $10 million, and they had placed the party on an allowance. So she does a leverage buyout of the Democrat Party with money that she stole with their collusion and criminal influence peddling. And this is the Clintons. This is the way these guys act. So that was an interesting revelation that came out. But as the New York Post put it, her account is ridiculous and unbelievable melodramatics for the most part. She says she gasped when she found out the truth. She said it lit a candle in, she lit a candle in her living room and she put on some gospel music to calm her before she called Bernie Sanders to deliver the awful news. But they say, as silly as her prose is, it does reveal an essential truth. And that is how Hillary Clinton used her tens of millions of dollars that she had obtained with influence peddling to do a leveraged buyout of the DNC. But let's take a look at the reaction of Elizabeth Warren, because they finally got her to admit what was going on as well. Here's Elizabeth Warren.
This is a real problem. But what we've got to do as Democrats now is we've got to hold this party accountable. This is a test for Tom Perez. And either he's going to succeed by bringing Bernie Sanders and Bernie Sanders representatives into this process, and they're going to say it's fair, it works, we all believe it, or he's going to fail. And I very much hope he succeeds. I hope for Democrats everywhere. I hope for Bernie and for all of Bernie's supporters that he's going to succeed.
Very quickly, Senator, do you agree with the notion that it was rigged?
Yes.
Yes. Now they're saying it. They wouldn't say that when I was at the DNC nominating convention in July. All the people that they were having protests, all the people who had been Bernie supporters, they were out there saying this is rigged. It was an open secret. And you could not get anybody who was supporting Hillary to give you a direct answer. All they would do was talk about the Russians. That was their diversionary tactic. Now, Bernie has chimed in and said DNC corruption is bigger than the primary. Well, that's true. He said her actions and the campaign's actions, Bernie Sanders, not just Donald Trump, but Bernie Sanders said her actions were essentially money laundering. And if you take a look at how she got that money, if the Justice Department would do its job, if the FBI would do its job, except that the FBI was her partner in crime under Robert Mueller. So Robert Mueller gets to do the investigation, of course, and he gets to run the paper shredders so that we don't really see what was going on, what he was doing with Hillary Clinton. That's the real scandal that's here. But, you know, when we look at the amount of debt that the DNC was in, and who knew? You know, they were just absolutely amazed because, you know, the Democrats would never do that in real life. And we're going to talk later about the tax reform package. The key thing that they're using in tax reform, they're coming out, they're running ads talking about the deficit now. Now the Democrats are concerned about the deficit. After Obama was running it up $1 trillion a year, now they're concerned about it because they want to have something that they can talk about that is going to shut down tax reform. They don't want any kind of tax reform. But let's take a look at what Wolf Blitzer said and how shocked he is about this. And remember, it was Donna Brazile, who was working at CNN, who was funneling questions to Hillary Clinton, colluding with her at the same time. But here's Wolf Blitzer in his astonishment as to what was going on.
Congressman, while I have you, get to another topic. Sort of shocking revelation from the former Democratic National Committee Interim Chair, Donna Brazile, who now says the Clinton campaign actually reached a formal deal before Donna Brazile arrived at the DNC to control the DNC long before Hillary Clinton was officially the nominee. She says this in a new book that is just coming out. In exchange for raising money and investing in the DNC, Hillary would control the party's finances, strategy, and all the money raised. That deal was signed in August of 2015, a year before Hillary Clinton actually won the party's presidential nomination. What's your reaction to this?
I haven't read the book yet. I look forward to reading the book. I think she's a brilliant thinker, and she's a former Hill staffer, and I'm always excited to hear what she has to say.
So this guy hasn't been cut in on this. He doesn't realize.
The Democratic National Committee not supposed to take sides in a contest for the presidential nomination. Bernie Sanders, presumably, he's reading all of this. His supporters are reading all of this. They're pretty upset to see there was this formal arrangement that was worked out between the Hillary Clinton campaign a year before she got the nomination and the DNC. You're a Democrat. You want to elaborate a little bit on this latest information we're now getting for Donna Brazile?
Well, I wasn't privy to any kind of deal. We were focused in Indiana, statewide, and even in the 7th District, in terms of getting the vote out, making sure voters were engaged, making sure our constituents saw
us. Okay, let's stop, because he's just going to talk boilerplate talking points with a politician. The bottom line is that nobody has clued him in on the fact that the Democrat establishment has basically dumped Hillary, and it's safe to say that. Donna Brazile has dumped her. Bernie Sanders has dumped her. Elizabeth Warren has dumped her. It's okay. You don't have to say, well, I know nothing. I haven't read the book. Don't worry. You don't need to read the book. We told you about this a year ago. And, of course, this was in works for a year that they were pushing this, just like she was working on the Uranium One thing for a year. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
And now, live from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to take a quick news break here before we get into Antifa and the Day of Rage, perhaps, that's coming up tomorrow. Maybe it started yesterday in UNC Chapel Hill in North Carolina, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. We're going to take a look at a local story there that I think is kind of instructive. But before we do, let's just take a look at some of the key news at the top of the hour here. We've got Prince William warning that there are too many people in the world. That kind of sounds like the rest of the royal family, doesn't it? You know, maybe we got too many royals. You know, maybe all these royals and all these globalist elite, maybe we've got too many globalist elite as well. You know, when you have a royal, they've got to have this army of bodyguards. They've got to have more limos. A royal has to have their private jets that they can go everywhere, just like the globalist elite. And they've got to have their castles and their castles maintained. That's a pretty heavy hit on the environment, isn't it? I think they have a really big hit on the environment. And, of course, he's not going to restrain the number of kids that he has. But Prince William is saying that rapidly growing human populations risk a terrible impact on the world. He's also called the Duke of Cambridge. The Duke said that that as a result, wildlife is being put under enormous pressure, quote unquote, and he called for the issue to be addressed with renewed vigor. His grandfather, the Duke of Edinburgh, who in 2011 advocated voluntary family limitation as a means of solving overpopulation, described this as the biggest challenge in conservation. His grandson, at a dinner that he was being feted at, said that measures needed to be taken to save certain animal populations, not the humans, of course. You know, save the whale, kill the baby human, especially those certain populations. We don't want them to have air conditioning. We don't want them to have anything. And, you know, if you cannot save the whale and you can't bring yourself to kill your baby, don't worry. They will do it for you. You know, yesterday we had a long conversation with the producer of the film Vaxxed that was censored out of the Tribeca Film Festival by all of those Hollywood types who just love the First Amendment. And now we have an article here from VaccineImpact.com. U.S. Vax Court sees a 400% spike in vaccine injuries. And the flu shot is winning the top honors for biggest payout. Folks, everywhere you go, you see these signs, of course, that tell you flu shots here. You know, you can get it at a hamburger stand, I think, now. A little roadside hot dog shop. They're doing flu shots. You know, you want a flu shot with those fries? Places that I would never think of allowing them to stick a needle in my arm, and they're selling flu shots everywhere. And as I point out in this article, and as we talked about yesterday, and we'll repeat it again because you need to understand this, I say the law that now forces families that have suffered vaccine injury or death to sue the U.S. government instead of the pharmaceutical company. That right was taken away 30 years ago. Ronald Reagan signed it, and as Dell Big Tree told us yesterday, they basically told him, look, we're going to just shut down all vaccine production if you don't sign this. They twisted his arm. They took away your ability to get compensation. They took away your ability to do discovery. The Health and Human Services Department will be the ones who will maintain the information about vaccine safety. Of course, they won't do any studies, but they will keep some information about it. You will have to basically sue the people who are collecting the information, the people whose job it is to protect the vaccine companies and not the public. And so they have special masters is what they call these people, because it's not a real court. We call it a vaccine court, but it's actually called the United States Special Claims Court. You may not even know that this thing exists. But as we talked about yesterday, part of their database, they say, is to capture some of the adverse events. Even they say they don't have more than 1%. And if they were telling the truth that it was a full 1%, the numbers that they had, they're extrapolating that out. That would be 5.9 million adverse vaccine events, 43,000 deaths if they were to extract that out from their 1%. Meanwhile, we see Big Pharma mogul was arrested this last week for selling fentanyl, for pushing this, and it was bribery, it was fraud, it was coercion. You know, 64,000 people died from this stuff, more than all the people that were lost in the Vietnam War. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and at the top of the hour, I was talking about how Prince William is wringing his hands. Of course, the British prince wringing his hands that there's just too many people in the world. And they're working pretty hard to make sure that that goes away in terms of vaccines and other things in the pharmaceutical pipeline. The big pharma companies own mainstream media. That's the a big chunk of their revenue. You know that if you watch any news on cable. You know that they own CNN, they own Fox News, they own all these people. It was when Alex Jones was on with CNN and Piers Morgan. They could have him going back and forth about guns, but boy, as soon as he started talking about the vaccine companies and big pharma, they cut him off. They took him off the air. But, you know, Prince William is out there saying, we got to protect the animals, we got too many people, get rid of the people. And, of course, if you understand, his dad, Prince Charles, had pushed the Earth Constitution, brought in all these people saying, we got to have a planetary court that is going to enact this stuff. And they bring in as advisors to their Earth Constitution plan or thing, people like John Schellenhuber, that the Pope had ghost write his encyclical on the environment. These are people who want to reduce the population in a radical way. They want 99% of us gone. So then I don't know who they think is going to be maintaining their castles and their private jets as they go around the world, but they think we have too many people, and we are making things dangerous for their beloved animals. They don't care much as much about us as they do their animals. But let's take a look at how this expresses itself, because this is a story that has been out for a week, and it keeps getting pushed back by other things that are in the news. And this is very important. As President Trump was talking about the opioid crisis, and there is a big opioid crisis. Understand, we just had a big pharmaceutical mogul that was arrested because he was bribing doctors to prescribe fentanyl. Fentanyl is a highly addictive synthetic opioid. It is more than 50 times stronger than morphine. Ingesting just 2 milligrams of it is enough to cause an adult to fatally overdose. You understand that? And drug overdoses from the country's opioid epidemic, and I would imagine if it is 50 times stronger than morphine, that fentanyl plays a big part in that drug abuse. We've had more than 64,000 deaths last year. That is more than all the Americans who lost their lives in the entire Vietnam War. So yeah, it is a crisis. And why do we have this? Well, it's because of profits. And it's because of the insane predisposition of people like Attorney General Sessions to look the other way on things like medical marijuana. They will not allow, even in states where it is legal, they will not allow the VA to give medical marijuana to veterans who are suffering from PTSD. They shut it down for people who are in pain or people who are not able to eat because of the chemotherapy that they're taking. It has some real medical uses. Nevertheless, they keep it in as a Schedule I drug, which, and you know that the Schedule I, Schedule II, Schedule III, Schedule IV drugs were created by the UN. Yes, the war on drugs was not a creation of Richard Nixon. It was a creation of the United Nations. They created all four schedules. They even put all the drugs in the schedules as they would like to have them, regardless of the reality. They've got marijuana as a Schedule I, but meth, which you all know how dangerous and addictive meth is down on the list. It's not even a Schedule I. So they have marijuana as more dangerous than meth. But it allows these people, big pharmaceutical companies, to sell things like opioids. The individual involved here was charged by the Department of Justice. Good for them. At least they got this one guy. John Kapoor, he's 74. And 7 other current and former executives at the pharmaceutical company, and this company is Insys Therapeutics. They charged them with racketeering, said they led a national conspiracy through bribery and fraud to coerce the illegal distribution of the company's fentanyl spray, intended for use as a painkiller by cancer patients. Meanwhile, they take things that are safe, like marijuana for medical use, and they push that away. Why? Because of profits. And there is a lot of money to be made out of that. And as I was saying, you have to understand what is going on with vaccines. We just talked yesterday to Del Bigtree, and you have to see that interview. We have put it up on Real News with David Knight on YouTube. Please watch that interview. This is the guy who produced Vaxxed, and I just let him run. I tried my best not to interrupt him. I had to introduce him and then let him go because he had so much to say. And let me just throw this in as well. The U.S. Vax Court has seen a 400% spike in vaccine industries. And understand, this is a situation. We talk about the vaccine court. It's not a real court, as he explained yesterday. You don't have the same kind of rights that you would in a regular court. You are essentially going to Health and Human Services, which is supposed to oversee the vaccine industry for our safety, but actually has been captured. We call it regulatory capture. It's the worst case of regulatory capture I have ever seen in my life. Because they collect the data. They don't tell anybody about it. As a matter of fact, most people don't even understand that there is a place that you can go to get compensation for this. It's not officially called the vaccine court. It's officially called the U.S. Special Claims Court. And they get to decide how you're going to be compensated. And they're not very friendly. You don't get to do any discovery, so we don't get any background information. They collect a little bit of information, but not much. They never do any studies. They never do any double-blind studies. They never look at a population group that wasn't vaccinated and compare it, the conditions that we think are associated with vaccines. They don't want to disprove that because they know that if they did the studies, they would prove it. And so they don't have a sample and say, what is autism rate in this population of kids who have not been vaccinated? And what is it with the population of kids who have been vaccinated? They don't do those kind of studies. They don't give us the risk information. And so what they've done is they have substituted high risks for autism and telling us that we have reduced the risk for measles. Well, you know, measles was never something that was considered to be, if you are a baby boomer or older, you know that it was a common thing for people to get measles. As a matter of fact, typically when we get measles, the parents would hear that somebody got measles, like in my mom's, my wife's family, her mom would say, hey, so-and-so got measles down there. Let's get it over with. So let's send all the kids down there and hang out with them for a day so that you can all get measles all at the same time and we'll be done with it. And you are done with it because you really get immunity. You don't get immunity if you get the vaccine. It may lessen the incidence of it, but we've had several cases where patient zero in a measles outbreak was somebody who was vaccinated multiple times. And so they say, well, you got to get vaccinated as well. But even when you go to this rigged system, even when you go to the vaccine court settlements from this non-court that is protecting the vaccine industry paid out $91 million in 2015. That was up from $23 million in 2014. That's a 400% increase, a 400% increase from 23 million to 91 million from 2014, 2015. Vaccine court settlement payments for flu shots increased the most from 4.9 million in 2014 to 61 million in 2015. So from just under 5 million to over 60 million, an increase of more than 1,000%. And that's why, folks, when you see the people who are selling vaccine injections at the local hot dog stand, don't do it. Don't do it. You don't need it. There are things that you can do that will help your health, things that you can do naturally to improve the strength of your immune system. They do not give you the information about what's in the vaccines. Typically, nobody reads the inserts. If you read the insert, you will be very surprised as to what is in these vaccines, but they don't do any studies about the health effects. And even in a rigged system like this, the Vax Court is, we see compensation going out from a 400% increase up to a 1,000% increase for flu shots. Absolutely amazing. Now I want to get back to what is happening, and we'll have to cover it in the next segment. You know, it's interesting. Where did November 4th come from? Why did they pick this date? There's no anniversary of anything happening with a big government system. Well, it could be. You know, let's tie it to this. Let's tie it to the fact that Venezuela has now officially bankrupt. They say we can't pay our debts. And so we could celebrate that victory of socialism with the anti-fascists. We could make November the 4th that the Venezuela proved to the world that socialism once again proved that socialism does not work. But when we come back, we're going to talk about something that happened in North Carolina that may have been an early start on the Antifa demonstrations tomorrow. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
back. I'm David Knight on this Friday, November 3rd, 2017. Of course, tomorrow is November 4th. We have seen full-page ads taken out by a communist organization in the New York Times. That was very expensive. So they've got some big money behind them. You know, it was bankers who put Lenin in a train with $10 million of gold and sealed it and sent him to start the Russian Revolution. And now we got somebody paying for ads in the New York Times for these modern-day communists. So we're going to take a look at where millennials are in terms of communism, but we're also going to take a look at something that happened that was very unusual yesterday. The University of Chapel Hill, UNC, North Carolina. We're going to take a look at that real quickly. Before we do, I just want to remind you, we're just talking about things that you can do to help your health other than get a flu shot. Between 2014 and 2015, 1,000% increase from the vaccine court for people who have been damaged. And this is an institution that is not very friendly to people who have been damaged by vaccines. And nevertheless, we see that exploding. Well, there are other things that you can do. Improve your immune system. You know, one of the things that you can do, as I mentioned last week, vitamin D is, if you're getting sick frequently, it may indicate that you have a vitamin D deficiency. So it can help to boost your immune system. It can also help you with the uptake of calcium if you're on calcium supplements because you have bone problems. Or if you're over 50, you need to make sure that you don't have a deficiency in vitamin D as well. And many other things, whether it is mood during the winter, that's why we call it winter sun. It helps to have you assimilate food into your muscles, not just your bones. So it helps you to assimilate nutrients into your muscles. But it also improves your immune system. And things like colloidal silver that we have on sale. We have vitamin D. Our winter sun formula is now 50% off. So it's a good time to stock up on this. Also, take care of your gut health. You know, if you've been put on some antibiotics, that's going to kill the good probiotics in your gut. And you need things that are going to help to support your digestion, your intestinal function. We have live probiotic cultures from 23 different strains in Biome Defense. You can get that at InfoWarsStore.com, now 25% off. Also, DNA Force, 25% off. And you can get 10% off if you enter the code VITA10 at checkout. You can get 10% off of Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix. It's a great way to get your essential vitamins and minerals without taking a great deal of pills. So that's 10% off with the code VITA10, V-I-T-A-10. As I was just pointing out, Venezuela is going bankrupt, and we have pointed out many times the hardship that communism has caused for them. But it has caused hardship for many countries. China, for example, we have the President Xi, who is setting himself up to be the most powerful leader since Chairman Mao, has vowed that this is they're going to recover from China's century of humiliation, is what he calls it. Well, they also had a century of mass murder. They had a century of starvation. And that was due to communism and to Chairman Mao. But he's looking at it as a century of humiliation from external sources. He's saying that China is approaching the center of the world stage. He's outlined a roadmap for turning the country into a leading global power by 2050. Militarily, economically, they have laid plans to lay waste to the petrodollar to come after us economically. They are looking at the foundations of American economic and military power and how they can take it over. Xi's vision includes, for the first time in contemporary Chinese history, staking out a global leadership role. So he sees it as an external situation. But, you know, we understand, yes, there was a lot of external oppression and interference in China. But they managed to do it to themselves under Chairman Mao. And I don't know that they have internalized that lesson because he is still a Chinese dictator. Still has a five-year plan that he comes out with every year. That is our greatest hope, that they are going to be limited by communism. Meanwhile, in China, young people there are kind of rejecting the Communist Party, and they're rejecting the propaganda. They say Chinese people are increasingly ignoring party propaganda. They're much more interested in movie stars. And when I saw that, I thought, well, you know, here in the U.S., you can't find a difference between party propaganda and Hollywood movie stars. they're one and the same thing. But here in this country, a poll has just shown that amongst millennials, communism looks pretty good, according to them. This is a survey taken by the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, a D.C.-based nonprofit, says half of the millennials say they would rather live in a socialist or communist country than in a capitalist democracy. What's more, 22% of them have a favorable view of Karl Marx, and a surprising number see Joseph Stalin and Kim Jong-un as heroes. So if you look at this, it's interesting that the same time that they're very open to these communist leaders, where Che Guevara gets about the same approval numbers as Hillary Clinton. Yeah, that sounds about right. But Bernie Sanders is way up there. The only person that beats Bernie Sanders is Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, interestingly enough, still gets 60%, even though they're kind of the rest of the people on this list are pretty much authoritarians or communists or globalists. Bernie Sanders is number two. So Reagan is 60%. Bernie Sanders is at 40%. And George W. Bush is at 39%. That's interesting. What about George Washington or Thomas Jefferson? No, they're not even on the list. I don't know that the millennials know who these people are. Most of these millennials are trying to tear down the monuments to those individuals. And, of course, they've got Mao down here at 16%. Very interesting. And that brings us to the event at UNC Chapel Hill. Yesterday, we got alerted by some friends that Carrboro, which is the neighboring town to Chapel Hill, where the University of North Carolina is located, that Carrboro had a bomb scare. It wasn't a bomb scare. They had blocked off half of the town, and they said they had a car bomb in Carrboro. Process that. Anyway, what was happening with it, they'd previously had an incident at the Davy Poplar, which is a big poplar tree, very, very old poplar tree, at the center of the university. And this was planted by a Revolutionary War general. And they said that if the tree ever falls down, it'll be the end of the university. That's the legend, okay? So this is, they were trying to scout out a place where they were going to build the university. And it is the oldest university, the oldest public university in America. Harvard was a private seminary. William & Mary was a grant from the Crown and so forth, and they eventually became a public university, but they went into bankruptcy first. That's a long story. But the very first university, there's a lot of people say, we were the first public university. They were the first ones to actually have a building. They were the first ones to actually have students. They were the first ones to actually have a graduating class. Some of the people had predated them with a charter, but they hadn't done anything. So they had the only public university that had a graduating class in the 18th century, in the 1700s. And at the center of all this is this big tree that the Civil War general, the Revolutionary War general planted. And so when you look at that, that is something that is a foundation, isn't it? And so that, like the statues that are being torn down everywhere, is just exactly the type of target that a anti-fa type of person would want to tear down, isn't it? And what they did was they set a fire at the base of the tree. And we're going to, when we come back, we're going to show you what happened. We had a professor who was trying to put that out, got severely burned on his face, on his hands. His shirt was melted. We got some cell phone footage of him trying to put the fire out, and it exploded. And then they tried to find the individual who had put that down. They circled his car. They were afraid that it also had a bomb in it. We'll give you that information when we come back. It might be the beginning of the anti-fascist celebrations that they've targeted for tomorrow. Who knows? We'll tell you what the individual said who set that fire, who set that bomb.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight. It's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we had to go to break before I could show you the video of the professor who was trying to put out the fire that was put at the base of the Davy Poplar, the symbol of the oldest public university in the nation. We used to have a generation of people who planted seeds. That's what you're doing when you're planting a tree. You're planting a seed for the next generation because you're not going to enjoy it. It's going to be the people who come after you. Now what our universities have turned into, or we've got professors who are planting the seeds of destruction. And we can see this in terms of the monuments that are being taken down. And here they tried to destroy a tree that had survived hurricanes, it had survived lightning strikes, it had been there for a very long time. It was a Revolutionary War general who had put it there at the center of what became the campus of UNC. And some individual had set a fire there, and I'll show you the video. I'll narrate it for those who are listening. You can see the professor try to burn this out, and it explodes on him. Here's that video. Pretty big fire. It's a very large tree. He runs up there, and he's trying to stamp it out. And
oh,
you can hear
God.
The explosion. It was a big explosion. And he was burned on his face, his arms, his shirt was partially melted. Meanwhile, they found the individual who had done this. They knew who it was. They located his car. They shut down half of the town with a concern that it had a bomb inside the car. Now, as they arrested this guy, he said, "You've witnessed the beginning of the revelation." Maybe he meant to say revolution. I don't know. But he did say, "Hail Satan." He kept screaming, "Hail Satan." And that, of course, is what we have seen from these Marxists repeatedly, just as I was talking about earlier. When we went to the Planned Parenthood demonstration, there's a bunch of Marxists out there who basically just wanted to censor any signs that we had to say. They wanted to destroy everything. They're left-wing anarchists who want to destroy the foundation of this country, a bunch of Satan-worshipping individuals. So, I don't know, but that was maybe the kickoff of this stuff. Maybe it was the beginning of the revolution and not the beginning of the revelation. People there were kind of surprised, though. But as you look at this, the longer these people stay in school, the more radicalized they become, because now our universities have become centers for destroying our foundations of our society. Joining us now is Bonner R. Cohen. He is a senior fellow at the National Center for Public Policy Research. He concentrates on energy, natural resources, international relations. He's also a senior policy advisor with the Heartland Institute and with the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. I wanted to talk to him about what's going on with Scott Pruitt. I think, without a doubt, the best appointment that President Trump has made. He, of course, is the chief of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and he has a new piece of action that has caused some controversy, and I wanted to get Dr. Bonner Cohen to talk about this. He's quoted in the Daily Signal article. He has barred government-funded science advisors from serving on EPA panels. So I want him to break down this inherent conflict of interest that is being shut down by our EPA chief, Scott Pruitt, under President Trump. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Cohen.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Tell us a little bit about what's going on with this. This is, as according to the article, it's aimed at preventing conflicts of interest while bolstering the independence and the integrity of the scientists who advise the government. So if they were getting research grants, they can't come on and be part of a governmental panel. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. EPA has some 22 panels throughout the agency. On paper, these things probably aren't a bad idea. This allows for the expertise of people on the outside the culture of EPA, to provide some guidance, some review of the various policies being put forward by EPA. However, the swamp here in Washington, being what it is, over time, cronyism set in, and these panels have, over the past two or three decades, been stacked with people who are not only providing advice on EPA policies, but they are also receiving grants from EPA. So who is going to bite the hand that feeds them, okay?
Oh, yeah,
are you
absolutely
going to tell someone who is contributing substantially to your financial well-being that policy that the agency is proposing is ill-advised? Well, no, you're not going to do this at all. Now, this has been going on a long time. There was an old boys network and an old girls network. It was cronyism taken to an extremely high level. And Scott Pruitt, to his everlasting credit, came to EPA, and he's cleaning up the stables, and these stables are very dirty. Mm-hmm. But what he has done, he has said, you cannot serve on an EPA advisory panel if you are simultaneously taking money from EPA through grants. This is a simple step, but it will go a long way toward changing the culture at EPA.
You know, that's what I like about Scott Pruitt. He really understands the mechanism here. So he's not only, you know, is he on the right side philosophically, and of course, unfortunately, President Trump has appointed a lot of people who are not philosophically there with the Trump agenda or with Republican voters in general. But Scott Pruitt was. Scott Pruitt was somebody who had sued the EPA as Attorney General, and I think it was Oklahoma, wasn't it, the state
Oklahoma,
that he was in?
Attorney General,
yes.
He sued EPA 14 times.
Yes, yes, exactly. So he was well aware of how they overstepped their authority. And when he's doing this particular move that he's making, that shows that he's got a great understanding and wisdom about the mechanism of how the swamp operates. And I think it's one of the reasons why he has to have so much protection. I mean, they are, if you, you know that you're winning, when you know that you are the cabinet member that has the most threats against him, he has to have 24/7 protection. They've never had an EPA chief who has had as much protection as Scott Pruitt. And he has saved us tens of billions of dollars, over $30 billion estimated, by just shutting down the Clean Energy Act, so-called Clean Energy Act of Obama. So he has gored some very powerful oxes, and he has to have protection for this.
Yes, he has. And, you know, the man has just been in office for about 8 months. So imagine what other good things he's going to do in the coming years. And with respect to these various panels, he is also going to expand their geographical reach. Most of the people who were serving on these panels came from the same universities and the same government-funded research institutes over and over again. And guess who was neglected in all of this? The people in flyover country. States such as, well, Oklahoma, Kansas, go through it. Practically no one there was serving on this, on these panels. So he not only has gotten rid of the cronyism that was rampant throughout these panels, and actually throughout EPA's whole culture, because who gets an EPA grant? Some of these grants are for scientific purposes. Other grants were strictly for propaganda. Money going to an assortment of green groups, the Sierra Club, the Natural Resources Defense Council, you name it. They were receiving EPA money to put out EPA propaganda, something that became also very rampant during the Obama administration when the EPA political appointees were taken from the various environmental groups around the country. It was a very those groups have had a long and very cozy relationship with EPA over time. And
let me interject something here, Dr. Cohen, because we're looking at the Daily Signal article, and they just pulled it up on the screen, and it is a PowerPoint screen that was put out as part of the presentation, and it talks about the total dollar amount from 2015 to present of EPA grants received during board service, and it shows then $77 million is got a big bar chart, and it says now $0.
Exactly.
We got to take a quick break here, and we're going to be right back with Dr. Bonner Cohen. And we're talking about how EPA Director Scott Pruitt is hitting home runs at the EPA, home runs for the American public. And this is the best person in the Trump cabinet. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Dr. Bonner Cohen. We're talking about what Scott Pruitt, director of the EPA, is doing to not just, I would say it's not so much draining the swamp as it is kneecapping the crony capitalism that has been driving the regulations at the EPA. This has been a very tight network of cronies, and Dr. Bonner is breaking this down. We're going to have him give us some examples of some of the advisory panels, what they are involved in as we go back to him. And, of course, this is an EPA director who now has to have the most security of any EPA director by far. of anyone that's been there. And so, of course, the press wants to complain even about that. Why does he need this big security detail? Well, because he saved the American public over $30 billion just by shutting down Obama's war on coal. You have to understand that there are ways that you can clean it up, but he doesn't want it to exist. And his war on coal really was a war on energy, on the pocketbooks of the American people. Expensive energy is not only going to destroy our lifestyle, it will destroy our life expectancy. That's one of the key things that has been helping us in terms of our economy, and Obama just wanted to shut that down. It wasn't an issue of whether or not it could be cleaned up. It was an issue that he did not want it to exist because he had crony friends in other industries that he wanted to replace coal. And so now this is another example of Scott Pruitt not only understanding what the core of the issue is, but taking bold moves to shut it down. Before we go back to Dr. Cohen, real quickly, I want to tell you about some of the sales that are still here at InfoWarsStore.com. We have Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine and BioTru Selenium, both 40% off. Brain Force, 50% off. Winter Sun and Silver Bullet. Winter Sun is our vitamin D supplement. Silver Bullet is our colloidal silver. Both of those are 50% off. And we have Caveman at 50% off. You can find all of those at InfoWarsStore.com. Thank you for your support. We really do appreciate it. It's a great time right now to stock up on these things while they're on sale, to support your health, to support your immune system, and stay away from the flu vaccines. As I just reported earlier in the show, a 1,000% increase in compensation of people damaged with flu vaccines, even from the rigged vaccine court. That's another example of inside crony capitalism. But let's go back to the EPA and how Scott Pruitt is shutting this down. Dr. Cohen, tell us a little bit about these advisory panels, because you just talked about how it was a crony capitalist network, good old boys, good old girls who are have this revolving door. They're getting the grants, and then they're deciding what the government should do with the grants. I mean, this is obvious corruption. But tell us what some of these advisory panels are doing within the EPA.
Two of the most prominent are the Science Advisory Board, the SAB, and the Clean Air Science Advisory Board. And these panels, the Science Advisory Board, reviews the quality or lack thereof of the scientific underpinnings of EPA's regulations. So if EPA decides we're going to clamp down on emissions of something from, say, a coal-fired power plant or some other facility, it has to do that on the basis of some sort of scientific research that would justify the numbers that EPA has come up with that would reflect the reductions that EPA wants. So this is actually a very important panel, and these panels should be able to look at this and see, well, is this really justified? Is this it, by taking this step, are we really going to contribute to cleaner air or cleaner water? The problem on the SAB has been that practically everyone serving on that panel has been a recipient of EPA grants. The same is true with respect to the Clean Air Science Advisory Board, another extremely powerful board that reviews EPA's proposed rules and regulations with respect to air quality. It, too, has historically been chock full of people who have been the recipients of EPA largesse, and these are not petty grants. We're talking about real money here, and this has been all. You realize that all of these people have regular jobs anyway. Most of them are either researchers or they're professors at universities, but they get grants on top of that. So, you know, it's good work if you can get it. But course, they have no objectivity whatsoever. And they have been part of the whole crony capitalism situation that has existed at EPA for a long, long time. And Pruitt has put a swift and quick end to that.
Yes, yes. And it's very important, you know, when we look at, you're talking about the clean air issues. I know that couple of years ago before Scott Pruitt got there. I don't know if it's hopefully he's taken this down, but there's so much to do. When they were talking about clean air, they would focus on fine particulate matter. They would call it PM 2.5 microns and so forth. And that's what they were using to attack the coal industry. They even attacked farmers, saying, as you're plowing your fields, you're generating dust, and we're going to have to come after you and so forth. I mean, crazy stuff that they did. They even had as a poster on the EPA website, they had a picture of the Smoky Mountains and said that was an example of fine particulate matter is why they called it the Smoky Mountains. It's like, well, you do know that was a name given to it by the Indians before there were ever any coal factories anywhere around. So,
when EPA wanted to regulate dust on farms, has anyone at EPA ever set foot on a farm? Do they have any idea what tractors do when they go up and down fields? There's no, I mean, you've got a bunch of urban elitists making policy on agriculture, something of which they have zero understanding whatsoever. And you know what? They don't care.
Yes, absolutely.
And as long as it serves their very narrow interest of concentrating as much power as they can in the hands of a very powerful regulatory agency, that's all that really matters to them.
You know, you're talking about regulatory overreach, and this is something that originally it happened with the IRS. You know, they would create the laws, and, you know, Congress would abdicate their authority to write law. They would create a bureaucracy and say, you write the laws, judge whether or not people are involved in it, and you run this through your courts. Well, they were doing the same thing at the EPA with water. You probably recall the case of the Montana farmer who wasn't even a farmer. He was a welder. He had 8 acres, and they put a little pond in there for their kids to play in, to water their stock and so forth. And he got permits from the state and from local government, but the EPA came in there and said, we own all the water in the world, and they started putting fines against him that were massive. But of course, you know, because this is regulatory law, you don't have any protection against excessive fines, and they were getting him for like $30,000, $40,000 a day, something like that. He had millions of dollars. They tried to garnish his wages. Has there been anything done about this overreach in terms of water yet by the EPA?
Yes. Administrator Pruitt, a few months ago, did away with one of the most far-reaching regulatory measures ever attempted by EPA. It was called WOTUS, Waters of the United States, and it goes directly to the point that you raised. This was a scheme designed to clarify, quote-unquote, EPA's regulatory authority under the Clean Water Act. What it really was a scheme for federal zoning of private land.
Yes,
millions
exactly.
upon millions of acres. And if a farmer or a rancher or a fruit grower, or for that matter, someone with a large backyard, wanted to do something on his property, he was ultimately going to have to go to EPA to get a permit to do so. Now, we're used to going to the local county government or the city government or what have you. No, you were going to have to go to EPA to get a permit to do something on your property that may affect, quote-unquote, waters of the United States. The bureaucrat in Washington making that decision will have been someone who had never seen your land, never set foot on your land. And if you were denied that permit, what could you do about it? Answer, absolutely nothing.
Yes.
And to his credit, Administrator Pruitt did away with that. WOTUS is gone, baby, gone. And in doing so, he did the American people an enormous favor.
Yes, yes. It's really wonderful, the things that have happened there. Now, one of the things that is still there, and we don't have too much time left, but of course that is the endangerment finding.
Yes.
What is the status of that? Because many people said
that is still undergoing review by Administrator Pruitt and his staff. As long as the endangerment finding is on the books, it is going to be a magnet for lawsuits filed by environmental groups who are going to say that EPA is violating its own findings when it fails to take appropriate actions to, quote-unquote, combat climate change. And so we don't really know what the delay is on this, but it would behoove Mr. Pruitt, who has otherwise done a splendid job, to go ahead and do away with the endangerment findings, because it's a time bomb that is
yes,
going to go
it is.
Off.
And we've seen so many of President Trump's agenda shut down by lawsuits, shut down by activist judges. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Bonner Cohen. Very interesting. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight. Waging information warfare against pushers of fake news. It's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we talked yesterday. We showed you some pictures of the campaign ad in the Virginia gubernatorial race. It was a campaign ad that showed a redneck with a pickup truck and a Confederate flag, and he had a "Don't Tread on Me" bumper sticker, and he's running down dreamers and young Muslims in Virginia. That was an ad that was run by the Democrat candidate. There you can see the ad there. It was an outrageous ad. The RNC chairwoman, McDaniel, says every Democrat should denounce the Latino Victory Fund ad. It was Latino group that was doing it. Perhaps they've got some ties to La Raza. I didn't look to see whether they did. But it was a very racist ad targeting white people. And, of course, what it did was it took the reality of what we just saw with the hateful Islamic attack in New York City. It turned that on its head. Because that's what the Democrats do in their identity politics, always turning reality on its head. RNC Chairwoman Romney McDaniel said that every Democrat should denounce this sickening ad. She said this ad is one of the most sickening things that was put out there, by the way, fronted by Eva Longoria, the Latino Victory ad. Do we have that ad here? The fact of the matter is that she's fronting the ad. It's despicable, showing people trying to run down young, apparently Hispanic individuals running from these folks. And, of course, one of them has a hijab on, so obviously Muslim. So that's the way they were running this, trying to portray the Republican candidate as a racist who was trying to kill minority children, dreamer children. Now, what's interesting is the reaction of the Democrat governor and the reaction of the Democrat faithful, because the Democrat governor came out. Oh, by the way, I should say that that ad resulted in a tripling of contributions to the Republican candidate. It outraged people. But it also outraged Democrats as to what the Democrat candidate did. He flip-flopped on his support for sanctuary cities. He had, in the past, he had voted to prevent a bill that would ban sanctuary cities from going to the governor's desk. He called it a political game. He called it promoting fear-mongering. You know, kind of like that ad that he had that we just showed you there. And so he came out and said that under certain circumstances, he would now sign legislation that would ban sanctuary cities. So in the past, he shut down the attempt to have sanctuary cities banned in Virginia. Now he says, no, I would do that. Under certain circumstances, I would sign legislation. Well, you know he's not. You know he's not going to do it. But he's out there saying, yeah, I would ban sanctuary cities in Virginia maybe, and maybe crack down on MS-13 gangs. Just elect me. We can talk about that later, says the Democrat. Well, the Democrats are furious about this. Democracy for America denounced him. They said yesterday that he had flip-flopped. He was saying, I'm not flip-flopping. No, I'm not flip-flopping at all. He will flip-flop if he gets elected, because he put that caveat in there. Under certain circumstances, I'll stop sanctuary cities. So this is what Democracy for America, a Democrat organization, said about him. They said, Ralph Northam's gutless, politically senseless, morally debased decision yesterday. You get the idea, they don't like it. To openly backtrack on his commitment to standing up for immigrant families. And then they started criticizing him because of something else he did. They have a black lieutenant governor candidate who is running down ticket. And in certain areas where it served his interest, this Democrat candidate for governor would show the black lieutenant governor candidate on flyers. But in other areas, you know, like those areas where they've got the crazy guys in pickup trucks running down Muslim children, in those areas, he would take off the black lieutenant gubernatorial candidate, a lieutenant governor candidate. Quentin James, the founder of Collective PAC, a political action committee that supports progressive black candidates, including Justin Fairfax, said the move to remove his image from the campaign smells of subtle racism. He says it reeks of it, if not a tone deafness, about how we are going to win in November. Leaving Justin Fairfax off the flyers, even if it's for a small universe of union members, sends the wrong message. No, it tells us exactly what they're about. It tells us that they are concerned about nothing but identity politics.
InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Roger Stone is going to be joining us in the studio in the next segment. In this segment, I'd like to talk a little bit about the tax plan that has been revealed out of the House. We've had a lot of media outlets scoring who the winners and losers are going to be. We're going to tell you a little bit about what is in this and give you an idea of some of this. But of course, at the center of this are basically two things: whether or not corporate taxes, which are the highest in the world here in the USA, whether or not those taxes should be reduced. And the other big issue is whether or not you're going to have state and local taxes still included on this. That is something that really hits the blue states and, as we'll explain, the high income earners in blue states more specifically. But let's take a look at the corporate income tax first. You know, if you look at the information that the Small Business Association puts out, statistics about small businesses surviving, they point out that two-thirds of businesses survive 2 years in business, half of them will survive for 5 years, and one-third will survive 10 years. So let's think about that. In other words, one-third of small business starts fail in the first 2 years, and another half, by 5 years, half of them are gone. And by 10 years, only one-third survive. So it is heavily weighted to the front. And I can tell you, from the standpoint of somebody who started a small business, I was in my early 30s when we did it, and you don't really understand necessarily all the taxes. And if you get behind in your taxes, that alone can take you out. If you don't understand as a business what your costs are, if you don't understand all the regulations that are there, that's a big part of your cost. If you don't understand or know what your costs are, then you're not going to make a profit. And, of course, Hillary Clinton said when they were doing the attempted takeover of healthcare, she said, I can't be concerned about every undercapitalized business, you know, because those of us who actually have to work for a living instead of spreading influence around for tens of millions of dollars in cash and illegal deals, she can't be worried about those types of people who are actually out there working. But the issue is this. If you understand what your costs are, and you have to do that if you're going to survive, then you will have to make that the basis and then build your profit on top of that. So the point that I'm making here is that taxes are always passed on to the consumer and the products that you sell. And if you're unable to do that, you're unable to make a profit, and you will go out of business. It's just that simple. Just that simple. And Hillary Clinton will have absolutely no sympathy for you, of course, because she doesn't understand how working people make their money. But the bottom line is that there is no such thing as a corporate income tax. The taxes that you put on corporations are passed through to consumers in higher prices on the products that you sell, or they show up in lower wages for the people who work for that corporation. It's just that simple. And unfortunately, we still have a situation that they're not addressing in this tax bill whatsoever. It was mentioned at one point in time. The taxes in America on products that are made in America that people try to export from America to somewhere else, those products that we sell in other countries carry domestic taxes with them. That's not the case in products that are made in Europe. Products that are made in Europe, even though they have very, very high taxes there, they remove the taxes if the product is going to be exported. That doesn't happen with American products. So American products in the global market carry with them a disadvantage. That's been one of the key factors, folks, that has been driving the offshoring of manufacturing and other issues. It's our tax structure, and nothing is being done to address that. But let's talk about corporations, because when I look at the Hill, They come in and they say, winners and losers of the Republican tax bill. And the first thing they say, winners, oh, corporations. But, you know, there is no corporate tax. We are reducing taxes on, we're reducing the cost of products that we sell when we reduce the corporate tax. We are increasing the wages of the employees who would otherwise have to take a pay cut. Because somewhere you've got to make a profit or your business goes out of business. So, yes, corporations will get a big tax cut from going down from the highest tax rate in the world of 35% down to 20%. And, of course, they're not happy about that. They don't talk about the fact that we have the highest tax rate in the world. They say major business groups will get a break on this. Super wealthy individuals, well, we'll see about that. We'll take a little bit more of a look at it. This is The Hill talking. And then they say advocates who want to repeal the Johnson Amendment. Yes, that is going to be a big part of it. And then they put down as losers blue states. And we've had Nancy Pelosi saying that this is taking out state and local taxes is going to raise taxes on the middle class. And that is absolutely a lie. Even the Washington Post pointed out in a fact check, they looked at who takes these deductions, and they found that it was heavily skewed to high incomes in high tax states. And so what's going to happen is they are going to feel the high taxes in California and New York more heavily. And maybe they will do something about it instead of having the rest of us subsidize that for them. And then the big ticket item that they're talking about here is the budget deficit. See, they were adding about $1 trillion a year to the budget deficit under Obama. But now Democrats have suddenly discovered that we have a budget deficit. Imagine that. They hadn't cared about that whatsoever for the last several years, but now they do. And it is something we should care about. But, of course, they never propose cutting any spending. No, that's never going to be on the issue. They simply want you to pay more money, and they don't want you to get any kind of a tax break. So they talk about the deficit, and they never talk about any tax cuts. Finally, and this may be something that might hurt the chances of this passing if they leave this in, homeowners, they're saying that the proposed legislation would cap the deduction for new home purchases and interest from evaluation. Right now, it's got a cap of $1 million homes. They would drop that down to $500,000. So that's something that will be difficult for them to move past. But the GOP tax bill that gets rid of the Johnson Amendment, let's talk about that, of course. That was something that's put in by Lyndon Johnson. He was upset that some churches had opposed him in a race that he nearly lost. And so in the 1950s, he put in the Johnson Amendment, which told the IRS to remove the tax-exempt status of any church that talked about politics. And there's a lesson in this. Whether or not churches should have a deduction or not, that's a separate issue. I think the key thing here is the way that the government reins people in, gives you a little benefit, hands out cash to you, or gives you a tax deduction. And what they did was they wove their web. You know, Nancy Pelosi said, "I'm a legislator. I'm like a loomer. It's like I'm creating this thing. I'm weaving this thing." Yes, they do. They have very deceptive webs that they use, like a spider's web. And this is an important thing for everybody to understand. What they did was they told churches, "You play along with us. You register as a 501c3 corporation, and we'll let you deduct. Let all the people who go to your church deduct those deductions." And then they said, "Oh, but now we've got leverage on you. If you say anything about politics, we will pull that away from you and the people that go to your church, and we will do it retroactively." See, that was the leverage that they got with people, thanks to Lyndon Johnson. And so for that reason alone, it ought to go. Long before we had the IRS, there was a tradition of not taxing the property of churches. That is something that has been in Western civilization. So whether or not you agree with it or not, that's a different issue than the way the IRS used it to suppress political speech. Understand that in the American Revolution, they called the pastors, they called them the Black Regiment. And they were very much opposed to any reestablishment of authority in the colonies that would take away the religious freedom that many of them had moved to the United States to escape. So now they're, you know, when we're talking about rich individuals, Rand Paul said, there's not much of a tax cut if you're not going to reduce taxes on the people at the very top. He says, yes, it's good that we're going to help people in the middle and the lower income levels, and that is there. But he says, if we're not going to do the tax cut for the people at the very top who are paying most of the taxes, it isn't going to be a tax cut at all. Reports are that the tax bill keeps the nearly 40% rate for the highest income earners. But Politico says, wait a minute, there's actually, and these are people who would say we want to tax the rich. The GOP has a hidden 46% tax bracket. So on the wealthy people, they may be actually going up on taxes. That is something that nobody had expected to see, an unexpected outcome of this. Many people who had been briefed on this were very surprised to see it. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight, and we'll have Roger Stone in studio.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and with me in studio is Roger Stone. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to start with the suspension of President Trump's Twitter account, because Roger is the guy. What? It was last Saturday, was it, Roger, that they permanently deleted your account? Was that
the day? It's interesting. At first, David, they told me that I had only been suspended for 3 hours and 22 minutes. 322, the numbers of skull and bones. Very interesting. And therefore, I waited and waited and waited, and it counted down. And then when it got to 1 minute, it all went dark. All my 300,000 followers were gone. The people I was following were gone, and so on. I spoke to my lawyers last night. I am preparing a lawsuit against Twitter. They were ebullient because the turning off of the president's Twitter feed proves malice. We'll be introducing that in court. You know, there are antitrust issues. There are First Amendment issues. The censorship of Twitter cannot continue. And what's really been heartening for me is the number of large multinational corporations who have come forward willing to underwrite my lawsuit. Others in the communication community who think Twitter is cheating, and therefore there'll be no lack of funds for this lawsuit because it will be very expensive.
Well, let's talk about a little bit of their cheating, because it came out in congressional testimony that for the hashtag DNC leaks, you know, Hillary Clinton is selling the false idea that it was a Russian hack and so forth to try to get people to pay attention to, you know, how was this information obtained rather than what is the information.
Yes.
And so as people were tweeting about this, and they had over 500,000 people involved in this, they were shutting down 48% of these tweets that had hashtag DNC leaks. They were doing that algorithmically. Yes. And then they admitted that later on with Podesta, it wasn't about half of the tweets. It was about 25% of the tweets that they shut down when Podesta's emails were taken out. So this is something they have a pattern of behavior of being activists. And I guess the question is there some kind of a federal elections violation there when they do a kind of an in-kind contribution and don't report that?
Something the lawyers are looking at. I mean, in my case, I feel like I'm being held to a different standard. In other words, people every day on Twitter threaten to kill me, yes, my wife, yes, my children, worst of all, my dogs. And they're still there. They don't get banned. There's no process. In my case, I don't think I've said anything that, say, Keith Olbermann hasn't said, yet he's still there and I'm banned. So it's unequal. That's one of our arguments in court. But I'm looking forward to this fight. It's about time. I'm tired of the censorship on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And actions like yesterday, the president getting knocked off for 11 minutes, I guess it was, the admission that they have manipulated these tweets during the election, this all helps build our case in federal court.
I think one of the interesting things that came out of the Twitterverse yesterday, as President Trump disappeared, and then they said first, well, we don't know what happened. Then they said, well, it was done inadvertently. Then they said, well, it was done deliberately by a guy on his last day out, or a woman. And then I think even more interesting than that was what the people on Twitter said. Donald Trump's Twitter was deleted. Finally, someone did the right thing. Sadly, it wasn't our government who did it. So this is the political orientation of the left towards authoritarian censorship. And Twitter is their baby. It reflects that kind of authoritarian censorship attitude.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Somebody put up something called Roger Stone GOP, not me, a parody site. They took that down. The official feed for the film Get Me Roger Stone was Stone Flick. They took that down. No, it's censorship. It's abhorrent. And we'll see you guys in court. Can't wait.
You know, it's an interesting thing, too, because we have Matt Dubiel, who's with our Chicago affiliate, WCKG in Chicago. And he was saying, it's important for us to get, in terms of our alternative media, it's important for us to get onto all these different platforms because social media has the capability, and he said this well before they did what you just described to you. He said social media has the ability to just flush everything that you did down the memory hole. So once they decide that you are a non-person, they can make you that way as far as the internet and social media is concerned. They can just flush everything. They can, if it's YouTube, they can delete all the videos that you've ever put up somewhere. They can find anywhere that you were even interviewed on another program. They can identify your voice and shut that down. They can make you disappear. And that's the thing that should be very, very concerning to all of us. And that's why it's important for us to get on all different types of media. We've got a situation that Gerald Celente said with these three big social media sites. With YouTube, with Twitter, with Facebook. He says it's going back to the days when we just had three networks, yeah, ABC, NBC, CBS.
They're trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube. Look, a special shout-out to John and Ray in Chicago, two of my favorite radio jocks, because they immediately called and wanted me to come on and talk about the Twitter ban. Or my friend Jimmy Mathis at WBAL in Baltimore. I mean, I totally agree with you. You talk radio, the other platforms, Facebook and so on. I wrote a piece that's up on InfoWars at the website now. They can just make you disappear, that you become a non-person. But really what they want to do is go back to the days when ABC, NBC, CBS, they had a monopoly on political discourse. If it didn't happen there, it didn't happen. It was like the tree falling in the forest. And now, with the advent of the internet and the fact that most people are going through the net in order to get their news, it doesn't take you very long to figure out that CNN is not news and that InfoWars.com is news. They want to put the toothpaste back in the tube, either by manipulating the algorithms or using their fake news designations. But we'll never go back, David. We'll never go back. The American people have tasted press freedom, and they like it.
Yes, except for the liberals who don't like to make their arguments. And as we see these different tweets, one of these person says, well, his President Trump's Twitter account needs to be deactivated permanently, which is what they did to you. So they're calling for that. And Twitter is very upset about the rise of conservatives. And it's, we're winning the argument, we're winning the demographics, and their only answer is to censor this. And even when it hurts their business model, and we see this with YouTube, demonetizing individuals all across the conservative spectrum, which costs YouTube money, but they don't care because they are about politics. That is their primary orientation. It is more about their power than it is about the money, because, Roger, if they've got the power, the money will come.
No, I've seen this in the case of my friends Diamond and Silk, where they have where they've taken down their YouTube tweets or their YouTube postings in order to demonetize them.
Or Ron Paul.
You know, it's economic terrorism is what it is. But you're right. First of all, they have all the money in the world.
Yes.
And Google's cruising to get busted. There's no question. The bottom line on this, they're all going to end up being regulated like a public utility.
I think they should be.
And look, the phone company's a private company, but they can't deny you a telephone.
Yes.
And that's how it should be.
And I think it's interesting because we see this very, very controversial case about the bakers and the photographers being compelled in violation of what they said was their Christian conscience to do a gay wedding. And they say, no, you're in business. You can't determine who you're going to serve. And yet they give these real monopolies. I mean, they don't, these small town bakers and photographers don't have a monopoly. You could go to somebody else. But the places that have a de facto monopoly, they give them a pass and they allow this to go. That is a real strange thing that needs to be exploited and probed. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight with Roger Stone. Stay with us.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Thank you.
sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and Roger Stone is with us in studio. We're going to talk about what's going on with Attorney General Sessions. There is now another call to have him go before Congress again because of George Papadopoulos. The guy who reminds me more than anyone of John Lovett's The Liar character. When he goes around and says, yeah, that's me. That's the ticket. I did all that stuff when he was just a campaign volunteer, the unpaid campaign volunteer. Everybody's saying, who is this guy? I've never heard of this guy. He's like, oh, yeah, I was a foreign policy advisor. And then prior to that, he's at the Hudson Institute, and he tells everybody he's a coal and energy expert. And they go, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And they say, well, he's an unpaid volunteer. We're going to go to Roger in just a moment. I just want to remind you of some of the sales that we have here at InfoWarsStore.com. Some of the most popular products we have, some of the biggest discounts we have ever had. 50% off of Brain Force Plus. We also have 50% off Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver. 50% off of Winter Sun, our vitamin D supplement. And as we mentioned throughout the last week or so that we've had this on sale, it is a very important supplement for this time of year because you're not going to get as much sun this time of year. That's why we call it winter sun. People have typically felt depressed, but there is actually a physiological reason for that, not just a psychological issue of not seeing the sunlight, but a physiological aspect to that because you're not getting sunlight to help your body to produce vitamin D. But it also has a manifestation in getting sick more frequently because vitamin D is very important for your immune system. It's very important for your bones, for your muscles to be able to uptake the nutrients that you get out of your food. If you're taking a calcium supplement, you need to make sure that you don't have a vitamin D deficiency because your bones will not be able to assimilate the calcium supplements that you take if you don't have sufficient vitamin D. So that is 50% off. It's called Winter Sun, a great way to take that. And it's a liquid formula, and I love to take my supplements and vitamins in a liquid format. One of those is Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix. It is a multivitamin, a multi-mineral formula. You can take that without taking a lot of pills, and right now you can get it when you check out. Enter the code at checkout, VITA10, for 10% off of Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix. And you can find all these specials at InfoWarsStore.com. We thank you for your support. Roger, let's talk about what's going on with Jeff Sessions, because now they're saying that Carter Page said he told Sessions about a Russian trip. He saw him as he was the only time they ever met, and he said, I'm going to Russia for a lecture that I'm doing there. And so they say, oh, well, that shows that Sessions knows something about Russia. Let's have him come back on and testify. The stuff with George Papadopoulos, the guy that we're just talking about, the fact that he said, I was this kind of person, I was that kind of person. He was an unpaid intern at the Hudson Institute, but he put himself out there inflating his resume multiple times, and now, guess what? The FBI has him on charges of lying to the FBI when he was inflating his resume everywhere. And one of the things he was saying was that he was supposedly in contact with some guy called the professor in Russia, a very mysterious character. Yeah. Maybe he was also in contact with Marianne and Ginger and the billionaire. Yeah, who knows?
It's very strange that this guy is in a succession of neocon think tanks, the Jamestown Institute, the Hudden Institute, and then suddenly overnight, he's pro-Russian. So he's working at all these virulent anti-Russian think tanks, a neocon, clearly a neocon, and then overnight he's in touch with the Russians. I believe he was wearing a wire for Mueller for at least 3 months. I've been through 10 presidential campaigns. It's very common to have these issue advisory panels that are strictly voluntary. They have no authority. They're mostly for a press release. And that's this guy's involvement. To try to make him a senior staffer to Donald Trump with some authority, that's a joke. But what's more concerning to me, David, about Jeff Sessions is a report this morning that he's now recused himself in regard to Uranium One. So he has recused himself on anything pertaining to Russia. He's recused himself now on Uranium One. He seems obsessed with asset forfeiture, this crazy program where they can seize all of your assets prior to your being convicted of any crime.
Not even charged.
And then his mania to crack down on legal marijuana in the 29 states where the people have decided to legalize it. I really think it's time for Jeff Sessions to go. He can't seem to do the job. And then more disturbingly, these tweets by the president who says he's been told that he can't direct the DOJ. That's incorrect. He can order Jeff Sessions, order him to appoint a special prosecutor on Uranium One. Andrew McCarthy, Congressman Ron DeSantis, Judge Andrew Napolitano. There's three I just nominated. Any one of those able men could get to the bottom of the DOJ Obama cover-up of Uranium One.
Well, we're talking about Uranium One. Let's talk about the conflict of interest that Robert Mueller has. To me, that is absolutely amazing. That here's a guy who, as director of FBI, and the FBI was investigating the people that, you know, that were trying to buy this, and that was happening for 15 months before the approval went through, and then they put a gag on this guy. And that was all under FBI, under Robert Mueller when he was FBI director. So why isn't he concerned about a conflict of interest, or at least even the appearance of a conflict of interest?
Well, he's got multiple conflicts. First of all, he has a long time, deep personal relationship with James Comey.
Oh, yeah.
And Comey is a central figure in his investigation. There's a conflict of interest. He also auditioned. He essentially interviewed for Comey's position as FBI director with the president. And he was passed over, therefore the source of his animus towards the president. Conflict number two. Mueller needs to step down. He's not going to do so voluntarily. However, if he became the subject of a federal investigation by a special prosecutor looking into Russia, looking into Uranium One,
yes,
he would have to step down.
Yes.
Which is, and when I said that to the Daily Caller, within hours, Vanity Fair and a crazy left-wing site called Raw Story, which rarely gets anything right, they immediately were out there Stone is wrong. Stone's incorrect. No, I think I hit it right on the head. That's why exactly. They reacted so quickly.
I mean, this looks like obstruction of justice, and it was so obvious that I looked at this and was like, is he there to destroy evidence for Hillary Clinton? Because, I mean, he's at the center of all this. You got the you got Eric Holder, the attorney general. You got Hillary Clinton on that panel. You got the Treasury Secretary on that panel. And then the FBI knows that this is happening, and it should have stopped the deal. They conceal it from Congress. They conceal it from everybody else, and they put a gag order on this guy. And all of that happened while he's FBI director. He doesn't know what's going on with any of that. He doesn't have any criminal liability for obstruction of justice with any of that.
No, and it regards not only Mr. Mueller, but also Mr. Comey, Assistant Director Andrew McCabe. And Lord knows, how about then U.S. Attorney Rod Rosenstein?
Yes.
So the big four, these guys are running the cover-up on Uranium One. It's time to bust them. No, Mr. President, you have the authority to order the Justice Department to appoint a special prosecutor in the Uranium One matter, and you should do so forthwith.
You know, one of the things that I looked at the other day, and it was an article by a lawyer, it's carried by the LA Times, and they were looking at the special prosecutor issue specifically, talking about the history of it. Said this was a law that was created in 1978. It expired, and they allowed it to expire in 1999 because they came to the realization that when you hire a special prosecutor, it is too easy to turn this into a witch hunt or a kind of Stalinesque type of thing. Bring me the man, I'll find the crime. It said you're typically focused on the individual and not on a specific crime. And that law was challenged all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court upheld it 8-1. The one lone dissenter on that was Antonin Scalia, and that's exactly what he had to say. So they let that transpire in 1999, and yet if that law were still in effect, you would have a situation where it would be a three-panel judge would be appointing the special prosecutor. He would be filing reports with them on a regular basis. They had a method of control, but now there's no law and there's no control. It seems like Mueller is totally on his own, totally rogue. We're going to get your answer in response to that when we come back. I'm David Knight, and we're here with Roger Stone in studio. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight with Roger Stone here in studio with me. It's great to talk to him. We're going to talk to him about Mueller and the investigation and Paul Manafort, who goes back a long ways with Roger Stone. Real quickly, I want to tell you about some of the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We still have 50% off of Brain Force Plus. Great product. If you haven't tried it, this is the time to give it a try. I would call it Brain Focus. It's my favorite supplement that we have here because it really does focus my mind. And it's now 50% off. So if you've tried it and you like it as much as I do, stock up on it. We also have 50% off of Winter Sun, our vitamin D supplement, 50% off colloidal silver. That is our silver bullet, which is our colloidal silver product. And you can also get 10% off of Vitamin Mineral Fusion drink mix, a great way to take your supplements, your vitamins, your minerals without swallowing a lot of pills. You can get 10% off if just enter the code VITA10, VITA10 at checkout, and you can get 10% off of Vitamin Mineral Fusion drink mix. That's a great way to take your vitamins and minerals. And, of course, you can mix anything that you want to with it to adjust it to your taste. Let's go back to Roger Stone. Roger, we were talking just before the break about the special prosecutor law history in this country. It's something we never had before 1978. They allowed it to expire in 1999. So now we don't have a special prosecutor law. Under the law, there were a lot of tactics to keep oversight, to keep this thing from going out of control. They had a three-judge panel that would appoint the special prosecutor. He had to file regular reports. He had to get permission of the attorney general if he's going to take the investigation in a different direction, as Mueller has now moved into President Trump's past financial dealings. Ron DeSantis, congressman, said that Mueller's has a very dangerous investigation, and it is, quote, not the way the government is supposed to operate. Your comments.
Yeah, look, we see this graphically in the Paul Manafort case, where they kick in Manafort's door at 5 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. They seize documents that are privileged between he and his lawyer. They basically pat down his wife and him as if they're carrying guns. She's an attorney, by the way. Mm. There's multiple violations of his civil liberties. This is going to make their case much tougher in court. They're using terror tactics as if he was some kind of mafia, you know, drug lord.
Mm-hmm. Compelling his lawyer to testify and saying they're going to do it again?
Complete violation of his civil liberties. Look, I think they have a very weak case against Manafort. Paul Manafort is someone that I've known for over 50 years. He was an usher in my wedding. He was my campaign manager when I ran for Young Republican National Chairman successfully in 1977. He's a brilliant convention politician. And it's pretty clear, I think, to the American people what's afoot here, which is you trump up all these charges against Manafort. Notice they spoke about tax evasion in the indictment, but they don't indict him for tax evasion because they don't have a tax evasion case. money laundering? The money has to be dirty before you can launder it. Money paid to you by a legitimate political party in Ukraine is not dirty money. That's a perfectly legal transaction. Moving it around Europe, that's not illegal either. Yes, you bring it in the United States, you have to pay taxes on it. That's a tax evasion issue, but they didn't indict him on
taxes. Apple does that all the time. Right. So all these corporations do. That's why they're saying, hey, let's give them amnesty so they'll repatriate that money. If they earn money abroad, right, they can leave it abroad and not pay American taxes. And that's a well-known issue.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the case against Manafort is a weak one. But the bottom line of it is, I think we understand the pressure tactic here. It's very simple. Look, Manafort, we're going to put you in jail for 15 or 20 years. All you need to do is admit you were colluding with the Russians and that Donald Trump knew everything. Just say that and we'll let you off the hook. And I'll tell you something. I've known Manafort 50 years. He's not going to do it. Mm. He's not going to bear false witness against the president. He's not going to lie to please silent Bob Mueller. He is not going to make up stories about the president. He is completely supports the president. He's not going to bear false witness. He's not going to perjure himself. He would have to perjure himself. He'd have to make these stories up to please the prosecutors. Not going to happen. Zero chance. Not going to happen.
Yeah. And there's a lot of legal sources who've been looking at this. They've been looking at the search warrant, for example, and saying, look, they got a search warrant for these specific things because, you know, well, they first place, they went to the FISA court rather than going to a real judge, a real court. But you still have to be specific about what you're looking for. And when you take it beyond that, then that taints that search warrant. It taints the data that they get with it. Others have looked at it from the standpoint of a new American. They said, This was illegally obtained because they used the basis of the fictitious dirty dossier, or as I call it, the filthy fiction. Yep. They used that as a basis to get the search warrant. So it was based upon a lie. When you have a search warrant that is based upon a lie, the legal doctrine is that it's a poisonous tree, and any fruit of that search warrant then is poisonous fruit. So there's a couple of different ways here that they would rule out all the stuff that they got from him in that over-the-top 5 a.m. raid that they did on him.
Well, not only that, but just the fact that they leaked on Friday that there were yes. indictments to CNN mm-hmm. without saying who, that's a violation. And then I read somewhere, Vanity Fair, saying, oh, well, that leak didn't come out of Mueller. It almost assuredly came out of Mueller because other than that, it came out of the federal court, which is unlikely that the judge leaked it. So, and it's a terror tactic. It's meant to put pressure on those who are accused for the weekend. Just another example of the abuse of power by Bob Mueller.
You know, there was an interesting editorial. I covered it last week. It was by an individual who had had a couple of dealings with Bob Mueller in the past. One of them where Bob Mueller tried to set him up with a guy who came in and said, I know that your client didn't get that money illegally, and I'll be willing to sign a statement to that. And so he has his secretary draw up a statement. And as the guy's about to sign it, he leans forward to him and he goes, I'm just lying because I want to protect my client. And he goes, get out of here. And he says, the guy got up. You could see the wire that was on his back. And he said, and I confronted Bob Mueller with this. And he said, I didn't think that you knew it. But somebody who was a scumbag had told him, look at this guy. And another incident where he came in with the Jeffrey McDonald case, the famous case of the doctor that they said had killed his wife. It became the basis for The Fugitive. Anyway. They tried to come after this guy for a very long time. They had been caught fabricating evidence. And so he came in towards the end of the process, and they had a meeting with Bob Mueller. He said he came in, he sits at the head of the table, and he goes, any comments about the impropriety of the federal government is a non-starter. In other words, you don't dare criticize what the FBI has done or the Department of Justice if they fabricated anything. So that's the kind of guy he said he is. He said he is an inquisitor in the mold of Torquemada.
Yeah, the bottom line of this is really simple. Mueller, Comey, McCabe, Rosenstein, these men have to be disbarred. At the end of this process, yes. They have to be disbarred. They're the ones violating the law. They're the ones cheating. They still don't have a crime that relates to Russia. They're trying to create one. It's time for this entire Russian collusion delusion to be not only exposed, but closed down. There was a presidential candidate in bed with Vladimir Putin.
That's right.
There was a presidential candidate whose top aides were reaping millions of dollars from the oligarchs around Vladimir Putin. There was a presidential candidate whose aides were hiding the Russian connection, but that candidate is Hillary Clinton. She herself is a cross between Marie Antoinette and Joseph Stalin.
Yeah, and there was an FBI gag order put on the eyewitness that could, the witness that could explain all of this. That's been lifted now by this Department of Justice. What do you know about when this individual may testify and blow the Uranium-1 thing out of the water?
I guarantee you that there's some very clutched Democrats today in Washington over that very question. But the sooner Jeff Sessions either decides to do his job or step aside as Attorney General, or maybe move him over to Homeland Security, where perhaps he'd be better suited for the position.
Just not the DEA.
No. I mean, there's so many individuals who could do the job as Attorney General, Rudy Giuliani, Judge Andrew Napolitano, and do it properly. Instead, you have a crippled Attorney General who I have to assume is in some way compromised. I could understand, although I didn't like it, I could understand his recusing himself on Russia. But to recuse himself on Uranium-1,
yes.
On what basis?
Yes.
On what basis?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing to me that we don't have any recusal of Mueller. And again, it is amazing to me that there is not really any process involved of oversight because, again, That law expired in 1999, and they're not even following the template of what that law is. So there is no oversight whatsoever of Mueller. I mean, he has carte blanche to go anywhere he wants to with this investigation, and he is doing that. And as we said, he's the one who needs to be investigated. He's the one who has the true conflict of interest. And it'll be interesting to see what happens now that we know that we have had the gag order taken off of this individual that was put on by Comey's FBI, threatening him during the election, saying that you're going to go to jail or worse. Well, that's it for our program. Thank you for joining us, Roger Stone, and thank you for joining us. And stay tuned. We have Alex Jones coming up.